Hi, I'm Paul Johnson. Thanks for listening to the podcast from Life Support.
So it all started, you know, with cigarettes, and then it was marijuana, and then I got into, you know, my drug of choice, which was methamphetamine.
So how young are some of the women that you work with, and at what age do these kids start using?
Well, I personally started using when I was 16 years old, and then that led to methamphetamine when I was 17, and I used intravenously from there. But the women I work with, all ages.
That's the voice of Patty Otto, someone who grew up in a church family and a church environment, but soon found herself living the life of an addict. Hers is a story of hitting bottom and finding her way out with God's help. Welcome to Life Support.
Everything you do from then on is different.
One of the detectives, I think his name was
Derek. He was a golden boy.
All we can do right now is come together.
Extreme domestic violence, multiple rapes.
Hey, it's so good to have you on Life Support. What we do in this program is we tell stories, and we want you to know that Jesus is involved with redemption. And some of the stories are hard, but there's new life attached to Jesus Christ, and that's what we want you to experience. And my guest today is Patty Otto. She's from allinministries.org. She's the director of women ministries there, and I'm so glad to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a bit about allinministries.org. What is that all about?
So my husband Dennis and I mentor men and women, either coming off the streets, out of prison, out of rehabilitation, and we just mentor them and follow along with them and show them that there's a better way to live.
And how long have you been involved with this?
I personally have been involved for about a year and a half. At first, the ministry was just for men. And it was just for men just because it's just not right for, you know, men to work
sure.
with women in ministry type of thing. So he started the ministry, and I knew I had a calling on my life to help women that are hurting with the same addictions or life struggles or life's hang-ups that I did. So I knew my time was coming, but I didn't know when it would happen. So about a year and a half ago, I started the women's side of All In Ministries.
Good for you. So tell me, men and women are very different creatures, but it sounds like they kind of end up in the same place, struggling with addiction. But
yes.
Are there different things that drive them there, or are men and women similar enough where it's many of the same issues?
It's many of the same issues. A lot of it is we use to cover up hurt because we don't want to feel. So therefore, we use to not feel, whether it be just past trauma in our lives or things we've done, or it can happen to anybody. There's no specific race addiction goes after. There's no specific person it goes after. It just happens.
So it can begin many times as a numbing influence.
Yes.
And then it kind of goes from there.
Yes.
In your life, your story is really interesting too. And I'm sure that much of what you experience gives you empathy and helps you understand the people that you're dealing with. But you grew up in a really strong Christian home, right?
Yes, I did. My first memory, it was just we went to church. And we went to church. My parents were very involved with church. We were there 4 to 5 times a week, you know, and God was at the center of our home. So I did come from a good Christian background. So, after I grew up and I came to my teen years where I struggled with who I was, I felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like I wasn't worthy enough. I wasn't girly enough. I wasn't pretty enough. That's just kind of where it all felt. And that was, you know, lies from the enemy. And they just got in my head and kind of, I started choosing not to go to church. And then things started to, I started using, and then things started to fall away. My relationship with my family and everything. So it all started, you know, with cigarettes, and then it was marijuana. And then I got into, you know, my drug of choice, which was methamphetamine.
So how young are some of the women that you work with, and at what age do these kids start using?
Well, I personally started using when I was 16 years old, and then that led to methamphetamine when I was 17. Then I used intravenously from there. But the women I work with, all ages. All ages from I've worked with a, you know, newly sober 21-year-old to 40, 60. I've got a gal. So the age range is quite vast, but yet their situations are so similar.
Yeah. So they're different ages but similar problems.
Yes. Yep.
And it goes back to what you said earlier. It can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And so maybe that's a good reminder to keep our guard up all the time, no matter who we are.
Yes. Yeah, because the enemy can strike anywhere at any time to anyone.
Yeah, especially when opioids is such a big deal, and now what's happening at our border and all the drugs that are coming across and so forth. Are parents usually aware of when their kids are starting to use, or are parents kind of like, I know with my boys, I have twins that are 17 years old in high school, and I'm always kind of wondering about that. But I'm, you know, but I'm thinking the best. I try to think the best. You don't want to like just assume the worst. Are parents aware, or do they just want to turn the blind eye and hope for the best?
Both ways.
Yeah.
Some are completely oblivious, but some are aware and don't want to believe it. It's just because it's so ready and available in the schools now. It's kind of sad. I have chosen to homeschool my children, but that still does not protect them from anything that goes on in the mainstream schools, because they are still involved in mainstream sports and all of the secular things. They're still, you know, have their phones, which has social media. What, you know, the devil is out there preying on the young ones, and the younger he can get them,
yeah,
the better chance he has them for a longer period of time.
Yeah. I think when I was growing up, you know, kids are kids, and we, you know, our brains were developing at the same speed, but we didn't have readily available stuff on our phones, and it's just really difficult for kids to navigate. How would you recommend, if there's a parent listening right now saying, well, I don't even know how to talk to my kids about this, how would a parent even begin to address this if they suspect, or even if they just want to get ahead of the issue?
To be bold and do it.
Just do it. Just ask.
Just be bold and ask the hard questions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, we are their parent and not their friend, which is sometimes the hardest thing, because we all want to be our child's friend. But we are, you know, initially we are the parent. And so, you know, you have to ask the hard questions. It's just like when people are praying and they're scared to pray out loud. You have to be bold, and you have to take that first step. And of course, it's going to be uncomfortable. Life in general is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But you it's doing the next right thing.
Yeah, and the world they live in is uncomfortable, so you might as well be uncomfortable with them.
Yeah.
I know my boys, we get the eye roll when they leave, because we're always saying things like, make wise choices, don't drink, don't do drugs, don't have sex.
Yep.
And they look at us like, you know, we have three heads, but we all know what they're going to be walking into out there.
Yep.
And you can't control their lives. You know, you just have to pray a lot and try to be a good parent and trust that God's going to watch over them. And they're going to make mistakes, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I made plenty of mistakes along the way. You know, when my parents, they were good. They prayed. They prayed. They prayed me through my addiction. Like I said, I started at, you know, really with methamphetamine at 17 years old, and I started using intravenously then, you know, and things happened along the way. I kept them at arm's length. I walked away from God, but they prayed. And they prayed all of the time, you know.
Never gave up on you.
They never gave up on me. Yeah. I had given up on myself.
Yeah.
And I had given up on God, but they never gave up on me. You know, even when we're younger, they always prayed they would marry a Christian man, that all of us kids, because I have two older sisters and a younger brother, that would marry a Christ-following person. And I never thought that I would be worthy enough to. And I chuckle now because not only am I married to a Christian man, I'm married to a pastor, you know, so it's just, I kind of laugh and just say, you know,
well, we pastors,
God's got this one.
We're a little weird, we pastors. So I'm not sure my wife is, I know she likes being married to me, except for the pastor part sometimes. It's not an easy role you have when you're the wife of a pastor, right?
Yep.
So you're young, you're beginning now to delve into drugs. You've laid out the kind of the reasons why you're moving in that direction. Was there a time when you looked around and said, oh no, like I'm in so deep now that I don't know if I can get out of this? Or is it so, does it happen so quickly that you don't even think about it?
Nope, because I enjoyed it.
Okay.
That was a hard thing. I enjoyed it. Speed made me feel like I was on top of the world, like I was somebody when I should have gotten that from God. It made me feel invincible. It gave me the courage to do things that I wouldn't normally do. But yet, you know, that also comes a lot of bad choices, a lot of bad choices that I wouldn't have normally done have I not been using. But it also, I got down some bad paths. I've done a lot of bad things, and I was raped. I lived in a lot of different trap houses, a lot of different homes that I shouldn't have been in. And I always knew God was there and that He was protecting me, but I wanted to live my own life my way, and it didn't get me very far. Or there was just a lot of bad choices, a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah, it took you down places where you really didn't want to go.
Yes, yep. Yeah. You know, it ended up to where I led the perfect secret second life, to where I was involved with somebody, we were engaged, and he was out of town Monday through Friday, and so that was my party time, and then I was a homebody during the weekend. And then I had contracted hepatitis C, and things weren't good. But then I had a friend that called up my fiance at the time and told him everything. So needless to say, the wedding got canceled, and my life kind of started to spiral from there. So I checked myself into my first treatment. And then after treatment, I started going to AA and NA a couple meetings a week. But something was missing. I didn't dive back into God, but, you know, there was just still a hole, mm-hmm. where something was missing. And that is where I met, you know, my now husband, Dennis, was at an NA meeting. And I started seeing him on the side, and things kind of spiraled with my ex. Eventually, I ended up pregnant. And I didn't know if it was my ex's. Mm-hmm. child or if it was Dennis's child. And I didn't stop using either. I ended up moving back in with my parents, and my dad was not happy that I was pregnant and 30 years old. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. That's when it all kind of set in. What am I doing?
Yeah.
But yeah. I still did not stop using.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you past the I enjoy this stage now to the
yes.
I'm stuck?
Yes.
Yeah.
I used to feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
When I used, I still was able to eat. I still was able to put myself to bed at night. I taught my body how to function while using. So I didn't know what life was like not using, because I was scared to be sober. I was scared to live a sober life.
Yeah, because that's what you're used to now.
Yeah.
What are the financial implications of this? I mean, drugs aren't free, right?
Nope. So you did what you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
As a female, which was sometimes it was just to look pretty. Other times I did have a job that all my money would just, you know, go towards dope.
Right.
Or else you ended up, you know, getting a larger quantity and selling it to support your own habit.
You did what you had to.
Yep, yep.
So you're back in your parents' home.
Yes.
And you're pregnant. Dad, yep. Your dad's not happy, but you're in his home. So
yes.
So you were welcomed in.
Yep. Yep.
Which is awesome.
Yep.
And then what happened?
Well, again, they did not know that I was still using.
Right.
Had they, I don't think I would have been welcome in their home, naturally. But I was towards the end of my pregnancy, and I had a little over a month to go. And I woke up one morning, I had stopped using on November 24th, 2008. It was the last time that I had used. And the next morning, I woke up, and I started to bleed. So I called my OB, and they had said for me to go to the hospital. So I couldn't drive myself there, so I had my dad drive me there because he was retired at the time, so he was home. And he drove me to the hospital, and from there, I really don't remember much. Obviously, I was coming down. The nurse kept missing my veins to put the IV in, which made me furious. Between the fluids that they were pumping into my body, the Pitocin to start, you know, the contractions, I went nuts. My brother had also come up to the hospital, and from what they have told me, that I turned into somebody that they did not know. Mm-hmm. I was cussing at everyone, all the doctors, all the nurses. I was yelling. I was saying things that didn't make sense. My brother said he was honestly scared. And so they rushed me in for an emergency C-section because I started losing more blood. With that came the testing of my son and myself, and we both tested positive for meth. So then Child Protective Services got involved, and I was placed under 72-hour hold, and I was defeated. I was in spent a night in the ICU because I had lost a lot of blood. They had given me 3 pints of blood, and I had a social worker come in and talk to me. I was not in my right mind still, and I had said something along the lines of, you know, I wanted to die for what I had done. Mm-hmm. Not that I was going to kill myself or anything like that, or I was suicidal, but that's what she took it as. And so then I had to go to a psych ward for a week. That had its pluses and its negatives, but it gave me time to sit and reflect on what I have done.
Right.
And also to get sober. And I literally... That's when I hit my knees. Mm-hmm. That's when I fell to my knees and cried out to God and said, I need you now more than ever because I have gotten myself in a mess that I don't know how to get out of.
Yeah. And that's when God gets activated though, right? It's kind of like, yeah, I've been watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did he intervene in this situation?
So then, well, Dennis took one look at Caden, my son, or our son, and he knew right away because he had, you know, 3 older previous children from another relationship, and he's like, that is my boy. I know that is my boy. So Caden was put into emergency foster care services while my parents were trying to get their foster care license. And I didn't know until 6 months later that the emergency foster care family that Caden got placed into was a pastor's home.
Oh, how about that?
Pastor Paul will be back with Patty in just a moment. Stories like Patty's are a part of a site called lifesupportresources.org. One-to-one care videos and small group story-based curriculums about many topics surrounding trauma, grief, and loss. The site, again, is lifesupportresources.org. And now back to Pastor Paul.
And that's when God gets activated, though, right? It's kind of like, yeah, I've been watching.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did he intervene in this situation?
So then, well, Dennis took one look at Caden, my son, or our son, and he knew right away because he had, you know, 3 older previous children from another relationship, and he's like, that is my boy. I know that is my boy. So Caden was put into emergency foster care services while my parents were trying to get their foster care license. And I didn't know until 6 months later that the emergency foster care family that Caden got placed into was a pastor's home.
Oh, how about that?
So I know, without a doubt, I always get choked up with this part, that my son was prayed for, you know, day in, day out for the couple days that he was there. It just, it, it was so comforting, and I just, but God.
Yeah, yeah.
Only God could place
right
those certain, make it all happen that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and while you were giving up on yourself, you had God watching over this thing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You had your parents praying. I'm sure you had many other people that you have no idea yep. were praying.
Oh, yes.
And I think sometimes we undervalue the power of prayer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's always like kind of the last resort. Well, I can't do anything else, so I think I'll go pray.
When it should be our first.
Yeah, that's right.
When it should be our first, yes.
Because that is an amazing story, and there are no coincidences with God.
Yep.
And so he was being watched over while you were being watched over.
Yeah.
Did you, at some point, when you were on your knees crying out for God, was there a moment when you felt like, I think there's hope now? Like,
Yes. When I was crying out to God, I just, you know, help me. I can't help myself right now. And it's just, I felt his peace like I never have before. I felt like I was being held in his hands. And then from there on out, you know, he orchestrated everything, you know, and I was willing to do everything I was told by the guardian ad litem to the social workers to, you know, the people at aftercare. I dove all in, you know, and I believe it comes down to a choice. We have the choice to either do this for good or we have the choice to do this for bad.
Right.
And so it's just like every next step I took, I was choosing to do good, choosing to do the right thing.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people when they talk about their encounter with God like that, you know, they don't always see stars and, you know, the room doesn't light up with angels, but they say, wow, all of a sudden, deep inside of me, I had a peace that I'd never had before.
Yeah.
And that's what you're experiencing.
Yep, and it may not, you know, the peace that may not come right away because, yeah. you know, it's not on our time. It's God's time.
Right.
But, you know, when we make the next right choices to live a sober life, to get good, sober people in our lives, which is the biggest thing, and it doesn't have to be like-minded sober people. It can be, you know, people from a church group
sure.
or people from NA or AA or Celebrate Recovery or anything. That's where you end up finding, you know, your friends at.
Right. And there was no looking back for you then?
No. Yeah, the scariest part right now is, or just during that, you know, my sobriety is knowing that I could pick up where I left off. And, yeah. And it just, that secret second life. And it would only last for so long before I lost everything.
Right.
And, you know, things ended up working out great with Dennis. And, you know, it's when we took the sin out of our lives, you know, so he became a Christian in March 15th. And because he wasn't a Christian when I met him. So then he became a Christian and, you know, we were still living in sin. But when we took the sin out of our lives, God started blessing us. God started blessing us with a house again. We were living in an apartment, and he, you know, blessed us with a house. He blessed us with vehicles. He blessed Dennis with a job. You know, I planned a wedding in 28 days, and it was the best I could have ever imagined. And when we took the sin out of our lives, we were blessed. And we were continued to be blessed. Was life still good? What did we have, you know, issues? Yes. You know, it's
of course.
He doesn't say that we're going to live in this perfect, you know.
Yeah.
And we still have issues and things arise and life gets hard, but we know that we are still blessed.
Well, we know pastors are perfect. So you're okay there at least. All right, and you also have a ministry.
Yes.
And it's amazing. Allinministries.org. If somebody's listening right now and they're struggling, is this a place
yes.
that you can help?
Yep. Yep. Okay.
So allinministries.org.
Yes.
All right. We're going to have you back because I have a lot of other questions to ask you, but I really appreciate your transparency and sharing your story because it all revolves around who God is and his love for you. So congratulations on being where you are.
Thank you.
That's a real story of redemption. And you know what? The Bible is very clear that even though you might be struggling, God never changes. He's always there, and he is watching. You may not like where you are, but God has not gone anywhere. The Bible says in Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. And that's exactly what Patty was describing. You know, she got down on her knees, and God was right where he had been the whole time, taking care of her, taking care of her son. And now she's building a life with a Christian man doing ministry together. So I just want to encourage you with that. And I'm so glad you listened today. I want to thank our partners, faithradio.com. This is where you can find copies of our podcast, and you can order any episode you'd like for free. It's right on their platform. You can see a video version of this podcast at fivestonemedia.com. And you can check us out here at Ridgewood Church as well at myrwc.org. So thank you so much for listening to Life Support.
Thanks for listening to this Life Support podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Life Support, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of Life Support.